International Diplomatic Student Association is Hungary-based student organization for university students interested in political science, multilateral treaties, and intergovernmental relations. IDSA podcast aims to educate its listeners on career opportunities to university students in Hungary, opening their minds to pressing social and geopolitical issues. The podcast is recorded with the support of EPR Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of the IDSA podcast. My name is Dóra Tóth, and my co-host is Dóra Barabás. Today we will discuss a very interesting topic, which is humanitarian affairs. For this episode, our guest will be András Molnár, who is a disaster preparedness officer of the Red Cross. Welcome, András, to the podcast.
Greetings, everyone. It's nice to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
You are currently working for the Red Cross as a disaster preparedness officer. Could you tell us about your position? What are the topics that you are dealing with? How does an average day look in the Red Cross?
I work at the Hungarian Red Cross, as you said, a disaster preparedness officer, a disaster preparedness focal point, and also a project manager. So the main field I am dealing with is disaster preparedness, which includes activities developing our capacities and the capacities of other response organizations. So we mainly organize trainings, experience and knowledge sharing events, but also we focus on local communities in disaster prone areas. So we organize different awareness raising events, activities for them as well. We do these activities, initiatives from mostly from EU funding. Currently, I'm responsible for the project management of two European Union Civil Protection Knowledge Network projects. These initiatives are aiming to develop a closer network of professionals involved in humanitarian assistance and disaster preparedness. Disaster response in the European Union. An average day, that's a hard question. I would say my days are varied in a broad spectrum. So most of the time I'm just sitting on my office and doing general project management stuff. I would call that paperwork mainly. But there are days when we organize, for example, a disaster response exercise for 200-300 people. These days are often whole days, so 24/7 we are up and working on these events. And also I have to highlight that during emergencies I have responsibilities to take part in the coordination of the response efforts. So for example, these times in the corona pandemic, with my colleagues I'm responsible to coordinate the Red Cross activities assisting the Hungarian healthcare system and supporting vulnerable populations across the country.
You have significant experience in international humanitarian missions as well. Could you please tell us about it? Which one of these missions was the most interesting, difficult one for you?
Well, I was involved in different cross-border response operations. Most of the time, as a European Red Cross National Society, we respond to disasters within Hungary and to the neighboring countries if they request assistance from us. But my most defining operation, my most defining deployment maybe was the 2013 Philippines mission after Typhoon Haiyan or Typhoon Yolanda, which was done together with the Budapest Waterworks Hungarian Water Aid Unit and supported by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It was shocking to see the damage that this never-seen storm done, both in the urban and rural areas of the Philippines. The images of the damaged houses and infrastructure, it's something that stays with you forever. But also, it was a defining experience as well, because the optimism and the positive attitude of the affected community was something that I have never seen before. So people, even if they were hit by the most devastating storm of human history, they were optimistic about the future and they really appreciated our help. On the other hand, it was really an important experience to be part of the international coordination on the field and see how the procedures, the mechanisms that I learned about are working in reality.
Humanitarian affairs is a big topic all around the world. When it comes to the decision of the UN or the member states separately, they have different perspectives about whether something is a humanitarian affair or not. How can we know whether it is humanitarian affairs? Who decides upon that and on what grounds?
Well, I try to imply a hands-on approach on this because as a humanitarian worker, my only aim is to assist the population who's in need, the communities who are in need. Sometimes diplomacy and politics are distant from people, but we have to keep in mind the people whom we work for. In my perspective, humanitarian issues are any situations when a large extent of people are in need for basic assistance. Any cases when there are extensive suffering of a population. So I consider whenever a population experiences any kind of suffering, we could consider it as a humanitarian issue.
Let's swim into a broader topic. In the international area, the UN agencies have a huge impact. But the power of the European Union is also undeniable. What is the difference between the UN humanitarian affairs and EU humanitarian affairs strategies?
Thank you for this question. It's indeed a complex and a good question that you brought up. I try to keep my hands-on approach on this as well. United Nations and its programs, funds, and other entities, they represent the common will of the 193 countries. And they are specialized on different areas like human rights, protection, childcare, and so on. And they carry out their services to assist the affected population in humanitarian situations. One of them, the UN OCHA, the Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, is actually set up to coordinate the international response, the overall international response. And with this, they strengthen our capacity to be able to help the affected population better. But we can say that the UN OCHA, with its assets like expert teams and coordination tools, they are the spearhead of international coordination. Meanwhile, the European Union, as you said, set up and established its capacities to respond to disasters and other crises across the globe and within Europe. These capacities belong to the European Commission's Directorate General for European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operations. This is the DG ECHO, and they are responsible to carry out humanitarian and civil protection policies of the European Union. In one hand, they act as a funding agency. They finance different humanitarian actions of like local organizations or international organizations in crisis areas. And the other hand, they have robust system, the Union Civil Protection Mechanism, that can respond to disasters and emergencies across the globe with different standardized modules. The mechanism involves these standardized teams from all member states and participating states. There are a number of non-European Union countries participating in the Union Civil Protection Mechanism, and they can be sent to assist in disasters like with a mobile hospital or firefighters fighting forest fires or urban search and rescue units searching and digging up people after earthquakes. But there are experts as well and in-kind assistance in these mechanisms. So, for example, whenever there's an important disaster across the globe, the UN OCHA would deploy something called UNDAC team. It's the United Nations Disaster Assessment Team, a group of experts who fly in to the affected country and assist the national authorities to receive international assistance. They act as the main coordinators of international assistance in this scenario. And if the European Union responds to this disaster, then the Union would also send an expert team, the European Union Civil Protection Team, EUCP team, a little bit of similar to the UNDAC team, but on one hand, they would mainly focus on the coordination of the before mentioned European modules and in-kind assistance. And they would supplement the UNDAC team. They would, I would say they would be embedded into the UN coordination, and they would work closely together, even in one, most of the time in one place, and they would share all the necessary information and all split the tasks among them.
When an armed conflict comes to the light, what are the legal tools that can be applied this time?
It's a hard question. The international humanitarian law has different tools and different guidelines, let's say. What we see in the recent history is that conflicts are becoming more and more complex. The web of interest behind each conflict, they became less transparent. Many actors are involved in these conflicts nowadays, and the space for movement of the international community is shrinking. But it's important for us to say and keep in mind that the international community has a responsibility to advocate on behalf of the communities affected by each crisis. It is important to remind each opposing parties that civilian life, the safety and security of civilians, has to be maintained even if there's a conflict. It's a really hard question, and honestly, I think the international humanitarian law and its application is currently under serious changes, because if we see the Geneva Conventions, they have a history. The first Geneva Convention was about the protection of soldiers. Then another convention has been written to protect the maritime soldiers at the sea, then prisoners of wars and civilians. But these days, rules of engagement, the way that opposing forces fight, it changed dramatically since the last Geneva Convention. In my personal opinion, international humanitarian law should reflect that, not just on the commentary level, but on a conventional level as well.
What do you think is the most relevant humanitarian conflict today, and how should it be resolved?
I wish I could answer that question. I think who could answer this question should receive a Nobel Prize, at least. The most important or the most challenging situation is I think it's not only one conflict, but it's the growing number of conflicts we see. After 76 years of the Second World War, we have a record number of conflicts these days. According to the Peace Research Institute, in 2020 there were 56 conflicts across the globe. Many of them we haven't heard about. They are not in the media. They are not not in the Hungarian media, but globally, somehow news reports doesn't talk much about. But even the big ones like the Mexican drug war or the crisis in Yemen, where there are more than 20 million people in need, 12 million in urgent need, according to UN OCHA, which is an unprecedented number. I think the biggest challenge is the growing number, and also the lack of funding for humanitarian operations and for organizations assisting the people in need.
One of the greatest problems in the world today is climate change. What role can international humanitarian organizations play in the prevention and handling of natural disasters caused by it?
It's a really good question. I think as humanitarian organizations, we have mainly three responsibilities. The first is that we have to advocate on behalf of the communities affected by climate change, which we actually do at the COP26, the International Federation of Red Cross and National Societies, and different national societies who travel together with their national delegations. They advocate on behalf of the affected populations to shed light effects we already experience and the effects that we foresee in the future. It's important as a Red Crescent movement, it's important for us to show for the decision makers how climate change affects people, in one hand in their countries and also across the globe. So that's one thing that humanitarian organizations, not just Red Cross, Red Crescent, but other humanitarian organizations as well, are doing actually right now. On the other hand, we have a responsibility to develop the resilience of these communities. So we must play a role in the development of different awareness raising programs to make people understand the risks that they live in, and also to give them tools how they can adapt to the changes they will have to deal with in the future. There are several examples how Red Cross and national societies do that. For example, here in Hungary, after the Danube 13 floods, we organized different workshops and community roadshows, on one hand to gain experiences, to get knowledge on the experiences of people on that area, how they lived through these difficult times, what they need in the future in these times. So it's kind of a needs assessment for us. And also to provide them different tools and knowledge on how they can face better or respond better in the future for these events. And third, humanitarian organizations are important actors when response comes. So we provide volunteer rescue teams, we provide volunteers to pack the sandbags on the dikes, to provide psychosocial support, to maintain shelters for people evacuated by the authorities, and many other ways that we assist the response operations. It's something that we have to develop more. Our capacities needs to be developed as the challenges are growing, and we are constantly working on that.
What are the main differences between managing the consequences of a natural disaster and the war conflict from the point of view of the Red Cross and other humanitarian organizations?
Well, the biggest difference is clearly the presence of armed forces. In a conflict, or especially in a complex disaster, which is a disaster in a conflict country. It's the easiest definition of a complex disaster. So in a complex disaster, for example, we need to establish trust, not just among the affected communities, the population, the people we assist, but between the opposing forces. It's important that they acknowledge that Red Cross, Red Crescent, or any other humanitarian organization is neutral. So our only objective is to assist people in need, and we are not assisting any force, any conflict party during this activity. It's important because if we want to get access to the people in need, we need to navigate between the different armed forces. And the picture, I think, it's more complex if there is an international peacekeeping force in the area, especially if we are talking about UN. A UN agency has to distinguish itself. I mean, the blue UN agency like WHO or UNICEF or any other UN fund or program operating in a complex disaster has to clearly distinguish itself from the black UN, let's say the UN soldiers with guns providing safety as peacekeepers. So for them, I think it's more difficult than for the Red Cross. And it is important to keep in mind that in an armed conflict, there are security risks, huge security risks for humanitarian workers as well. There are different security regulations that define daily life of a humanitarian worker in a conflict area. It's a constant stress for them, always, for example, always changing the routes and maintaining radio contact with their headquarters whenever they are on a mission outside their areas. And sadly, attacks happen against humanitarian workers. In 2020, there were more than 400 attacks against humanitarian workers, and almost 200 humanitarians get, for example, kidnapped, which is a huge risk, which we have to address. And that's why I said earlier that a humanitarian organization has to work extensively on the acknowledgement of the opposing forces, even if they are regular armed groups like militaries or irregular groups like freedom fighters or guerrillas or whatever kind of conflict are we.
How do you see the efficiency of humanitarian operations in recent years? Is there a possibility for improvement?
There's always a possibility for improvement. I mean, for example, technology is developing every day. Every day we see new technologies coming to the market, and humanitarian organizations need to follow these developments and find a way how to implement them in the field. Fortunately, there are different funding opportunities for them. For example, the European Union Horizon Program, they have a priority area or a funding opportunity to develop such tools like remote sensing into disaster response. And these technologies are developing constantly. So I think in one hand, there's a technological need for development. On the other hand, there's a need for development in fundraising. As I said before, many humanitarian operations are really unfunded or underfunded, which needs to be addressed in the future with more involvement of individuals, companies, and nations like governments as well. Thirdly, one field that often gets critics is transparency. There are different organizations providing trainings and procedure development for humanitarian organizations to be more transparent. I could mention like ActionAid. It's a UK charity mainly focusing on the development of transparency in the humanitarian field. I think if humanitarian operations would be more transparent globally, maybe the willingness of donors would be greater, and also the acknowledgement of parties in conflicts, for example.
As the last question, how do you see the future humanitarian work of the Red Cross?
There are two challenges that we see in the 21st century. Actually, we talked both of them before. The first is climate change. We see that as climate change increases, we see that there will be an increasing trend of weather extremities, a shift in rain patterns, in precipitation patterns, and we also see that the occurrence of damaging storms, for example, would be higher in the future. So we need to be prepared for this. We need to develop ourselves to be able to better respond, and also we need to assist the communities to adapt for this. Whenever I talk about climate change, I always emphasize health and health promotion. Most of the times when we think about climate change and adaptation, we think of forest fires, floods, and heat waves, and people would imagine like sandbag filling trainings and these kind of general disaster response actions. But I think it's very important to highlight that in every emergency, every disaster, the most vulnerable groups are the groups of people who live with chronic diseases. And many chronic diseases can be prevented by a healthier lifestyle, exercising, a healthy diet, and so on. So I think the preventable communicative diseases, the prevention of these NCDs is really important for climate change adaptation. And this is where Red Cross plays an important role, I think, in the everyday life globally. In the future, we need to increase these kind of programs, not just the trainings for response volunteers or firefighters or ambulance services, but to address the communities and give them a hand to live a healthier life. The other challenge we discussed is the growing number of conflicts. It might be in relation with climate change, as climate change shifts weather patterns and droughts, for example, will become more occurrent more often in the future in many areas of our globe, and this will lead more conflicts across the world, which we have to be also prepared as humanitarian workers.
That was the end game of this week's podcast. We were discussing with András Molnár humanitarian affairs globally and the operation of the Red Cross in these situations. I was Dóra Tóth, and my co-host was Dóra Barabás. Thank you for listening.